Welcome back to the program. In earlier generations, the truly bright kids might have become writers or political leaders or climbers of the corporate ladder. Today, they become tech visionaries and entrepreneurs, make millions gaming the systems of Las Vegas, or masterminding a heist of epic proportions. These new geniuses are the stuff of the work of our guest today, Ben Mezrich. He's the author of the best-selling Bringing Down the House, which became the basis for the movie 21, as well as Accidental Billionaires, which became the movie The Social Network. Mark Zuckerberg has called him the Jackie Collins of Silicon Valley. It is my pleasure to welcome Ben Mezrich back to this program to talk about his newest work, Sex on the Moon, the amazing story behind the most audacious heist in history. Ben Mezrich, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Good to have you here. How does it feel to be compared to Jackie Collins?
I love it. I thought that was a great quote. I wanted to put it on the back of the book.
There you go.
And, listen, Jackie Collins is wonderful, and I understand why Mark Zuckerberg didn't like Accidental Billionaires. I get it, but I stand by it. I say that it's true, and he says that it's not.
Well, a very different character, the character of Thad Roberts, who is at the center of Sex on the Moon. Talk first about how Thad Roberts came to your attention.
Sure. I mean, actually, you know, I've kind of become the go-to guy for every crazy story whenever it involves a college kid or somebody really smart who pulls something off. And I really got a call from some mutual friends. Thad had just gotten out of jail. And, you know, they said, this kid wants to tell you his story. And it was something I'd always wanted to write about NASA. I've always been obsessed with NASA. I think it's the coolest place in the world. And when you think of NASA, you think of the 60s. And, you know, right. You think of Tom Hanks and a little silver capsule floating around in space. But that's not what it's like today. And getting this call from this kid, it was the perfect way to get inside.
And what was particularly remarkable as the story unfolds is that this was a story that really rocked this institution of NASA, and yet it was little noted and even less reported.
Yeah, I mean, it was completely covered up. You know, when I looked into it and I realized no one had written about it, there was one article in the LA Times at the time and then nothing. NASA was embarrassed. And, you know, this kid was one of their own. You know, he was on his way to becoming an astronaut. And he did something crazy.
Which was to steal moon rocks.
Stole right? a 600-pound safe full of moon rocks from every moon landing in history. And he got it out of NASA off this, you know, highly secure campus. He spread them on a bed and had sex with his girlfriend on the moon rocks. And then he tried to sell them over the Internet. And it's crazy. I mean, a moon rock is the most valuable thing on Earth. You know, we collected them during the Apollo missions, and they can never be gotten again. And 1 gram was once offered for $5 million. So it was a huge heist at the time.
Was Thad Roberts a troubled guy? I mean, it's hard to find this line between the degree to which this was a college prank to impress his girlfriend, his 19-year-old girlfriend at the time, or whether it was a reflection of something that he might have done in some other way at some other time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Listen, he had a bad past. He came from a very tough fundamentalist Mormon household. He was kicked out of his home when he was 18 for having premarital sex. He was essentially banished from, you know, everything he had known before. He had no money. He gets into NASA. He's in the co-op program, and he's a big star there, and everyone loves him. But inside, he's got something missing. You know, he feels like he needs to keep doing things. And he had already stolen some fossils from a museum, just pocketed them while he was working at the museum. And so he had an issue with sort of right and wrong.
An issue with right and wrong, and also an issue with ownership. It's like, well, he had them, you know, he talks about the scientist whose lab these were in. He had them long enough. It's
right.
My turn.
I mean, that's definitely the way Thad thinks, is if you're not using something, then it's free game. So it's definitely a disconnect. You know, he sees these moon rocks that aren't being used anymore. They'd already been experimented on, and he thinks, why can't I take them?
He also saw himself as a kind of, or wanted to see himself, I suppose, as a kind of James Bond-like character.
Yeah, I mean, he even had the James Bond theme song, you know, playing in his head as he did the crime. He really wanted to be James Bond. He wanted to be this larger-than-life movie character. I think that was part of what drove him to do it, is just seeing himself bigger, you know.
Why didn't any of this show up, these personality traits and these things that we're talking about, as he worked his way up the NASA hierarchy, as you say, on his way to becoming an astronaut?
Well, it's funny. You interview anybody who worked with him, and everyone, you know, said he was ultra-enthusiastic. And so I think these character traits did come out, but they weren't seen as bad things. He was just over the top. He was someone who was larger than life. He could speak 5 languages. He scuba dived. He flew airplanes. You know, he would go on these paleontology digs. And he just did everything, and everyone noticed it. But they didn't think, oh, well, he's going to be a criminal. They just thought he's, you know, overly enthusiastic. He's incredibly energetic. So I think there were certainly signs.
He was wanting to be the most interesting man in the world, Karen.
I mean, that's really it. You know, he pulled these pranks all along. He snuck into the space shuttle simulator, you know, things like that he was already doing. It was just one more step.
Talk about how he began to plan to set up this heist.
Right. Well, the safe that he ended up stealing was in a lab that had a cipher lock, which is one of those electronic locks with a keypad on it. So he had to use fluorescing powder. He put it on the keys so that you could see what keys had been pressed when you shined a black light on it. He had to figure out, you know, when he could go if he chose a very rainy night so that no one would get out of the security kiosks. When you drive through the NASA campus, you have to drive at 5 miles per hour. So the whole getaway was at 5 miles per hour. He borrowed a Jeep from someone who had a NASA sticker on the side, someone who worked there as well. He switched license plates. He found a hotel room where they were going to crack the safe. I mean, it took a lot of planning. It was you know, weeks in the planning even before he met the girl that he pulled it off for. So he had already been thinking about it for a while.
Even if he hadn't met the girl, I mean, he was pretty well on his way to wanting to do this.
Well, I think so. I mean, the way he describes it is, you know, she was the catalyst. She was the one that drove him over the top because he was already thinking about it, and he even had reached out on the Internet. He had found this Belgium mineral collector, this guy named Axel Emmerman. This guy's never been out of Antwerp, who basically was saying he would put up $100,000 to buy a moon rock. Unbeknownst to that, it was actually the FBI. Axel Emmerman had turned to the FBI, so it was really the FBI he was communicating with. But, you know, he was already in the planning stages. Then he meets this girl, and he falls in love, and he says to her, I'm thinking of stealing these moon rocks, and he thinks she's going to say, don't do it, are you crazy? And she says, that sounds romantic. And so that's what set him off to do it right then. But, you know, it's hard to say whether he would have done it without her or not.
Given how smart Roberts was, it's hard to believe that he was willing to sell these rocks or to find somebody to fence them just blind over the Internet.
I mean, it's the crazy part of the story. And, you know, the thing is, the guy's not a criminal. He's not this master criminal. To him, it was kind of a college prank, and the selling of it was kind of an afterthought. Because any one of us would think, you're not going to, you know, be able to sell the most valuable thing on Earth over the Internet and not get caught. But that's exactly what he tried to do. And, you know, I managed to get all of the transcripts from the files. The FBI were wearing these wires when they took him down. And the first thing he says when he walks into the restaurant is, you know, if you're wearing a wire, I'm screwed. And the guy, of course, the woman's wearing a wire. So it seems like he just didn't think that through, that, you know, you're going to get caught when you do something like this. But this didn't matter to him.
Why did NASA work so hard to cover this up?
Well, I mean, I think NASA was embarrassed by it. I think, you know, first of all, their security was obviously very lax. But also, you know, this was one of their own. This was someone on the inside. And the people at NASA genuinely love science, and they love space, and they're doing it because they love it. And then one of them just turns on them and steals a safe. And to them, this was a huge blow and an embarrassment and a betrayal. And they didn't want this kid becoming famous. So they weren't thrilled about it. They didn't do any interviews and essentially went away very quickly.
And yet he got, what, 7.5, 8 years that he served in federal prison?
Yeah, I mean, they threw the book at him. He got 7.5 years. His original sentence was 100 months, which is an enormous sentence. This is a kid who came from nothing and ended up with nothing. I mean, he was in prison. No one spoke to him. The girl dumped him. None of his old friends ever spoke to him. His family never visited him. I mean, he was just locked away for the better part of a decade. So he really did serve his time. But, you know, I mean, he stole a national treasure, so it's hard to say he didn't deserve to go to prison. He definitely did, but 7.5 years seems very excessive.
Did he argue that this was just a college prank to impress his girlfriend?
He did, and he actually took the fall for the girls. So his girlfriend and another girl were his accomplices, and they didn't do any jail time. He's the only one who did, you know, him and this other guy who helped find the Internet guy were the two who did prison time. He expected to get 6 months, maybe a year at most, and they threw the book at him.
Why do you think that was? Was that part of the cover-up, or were there some other things that were
at play? No, well, the professor whose lab he stole the safe from says that within the safe was also these notebooks that contained his life's work that he was going to use to write a book, and those notebooks were never found. And so NASA said that Thad Roberts destroyed the notebooks, and so it was this malicious thing. Not only did he steal the moon rocks, but he destroyed all of the documentation that went with them. Thad says that he never saw any notebooks, that there were no notebooks. The FBI never found any trace of any notebooks. So that's the reason they threw the book at him. The judge decided that she believed there were these notebooks and that Thad had destroyed them.
What do you think about the notebooks?
I mean, I have no idea. I've asked him point blank many times, and he has said, no, I never saw any notebooks. I mean, I think it's possible that he just didn't notice them, that he just chucked everything that was in the safe that wasn't moon rocks. I don't know. There's no reason for this guy to have lied, this scientist who's a very eminent Apollo scientist. And mm-hmm. It certainly, damaged his career, this theft, because it was out of his office. There's no question that Thad deserved to do time in prison. But whether these notebooks existed or not, I have no way of knowing.
It was originally a bigger safe with a bigger collection of moon rocks that he was really after.
Yeah, so when he first concocted the plan, he was working in the lunar lab, and that's where they keep the 840 pounds of moon rocks that NASA has. And in the corner was a safe with 17 pounds in it that was considered trash because it was moon rocks that had already been experimented on. And that's originally what he wanted to steal, and that would have been worth billions, if not trillions, of dollars. But that, didn't have a way of getting that safe. So he ended up changing the crime and stealing it from his boss's office.
To what extent do you think that he was interested in the money or just in stealing them and getting the rocks?
I think the money was an afterthought. I really do. I mean, he didn't even ask for that much money. $100,000 for what he had was nothing. It was many millions of dollars more than that worth. And the bottom line is this kid came from nothing. I mean, even a little bit of money was a lot of money to him. So he didn't steal this safe for money. He stole it to do something wild and cool and bigger than life, to impress his girlfriend. And then he wanted to sell it.
And he also had this reputation. We were talking about the James Bond aspect. I mean, this was a guy that wherever he was, whether it was in school or whether it was at NASA, wanted to be everybody's social director. He was
exactly.
The party guy.
I mean, he had reinvented himself as the social chair of the co-ops and interns at NASA. He was, throwing parties every weekend. He had become someone he wasn't. And I think that was all part of it. I mean, he needed to be that guy that everyone loved.
Did he want to get caught? Was part of it that he couldn't sustain or that he was maybe couldn't sustain the charade forever?
I mean, maybe. I don't think he wanted to get caught, but he certainly wanted everyone to know about it. It's a tough thing. He was close to achieving his dream, but in the back of his mind, he thought he could never be an astronaut for real. He thought, as close as I'm going to come, I'm not going to make it. And so he wanted to do something larger than life.
Do you think he would have made it?
Well, it's extremely hard. Anybody has a small chance of doing it. And this is a kid who didn't come from money and didn't have family support. And after his three tours as a co-op at NASA, he would have to apply with everyone else to try and get into the astronaut training program. And it would take years. And during those years, what was he going to do? And I think that was his fear. He didn't have any money. He had a failed marriage and no family. So it's tough to know what would have happened.
The family dynamic that you referred to is an odd thing, the way he was disowned by his family long before this incident happened.
Yeah, he was. He had been on his Mormon mission, and he had confessed to having had sex with his girlfriend, expecting, a slap on the wrist or penance or whatever. And they just kicked him off the mission and told his parents. So when he got home, his parents banished him to the basement and said he needed to live in the basement for 6 months. All he got was the duffel bag he had with him, and he wasn't allowed to speak to his brothers or anybody in his family ever again. And then he moved out and married the girl that he had been having sex with. So it was a horrible childhood.
Mm-hmm. And to what extent does he still carry that with him, do you think, in your conversations?
Knowing him, I feel like he'll always carry it with him. Mm-hmm. It doesn't excuse anything, but he certainly needs love. He needs people to like him. And he is very charismatic, and he is very likable. But, this is a guy who lost, had no family. And when he was in jail, no one visits him. No one calls him. And it's a very hard thing to be alone like that.
And now he's gone back to college.
Well, he's back at University of Utah getting his PhD. I believe he's just leaving there, and he's going to finish up his PhD elsewhere. But, yeah, he's a smart kid, He's trying to put his life back together.
And what does he think of this story being out there now?
Well, I mean, he likes, the fact that it's out there. He's also scared because he knows that there are a lot of people who are going to hate him and a lot of people who feel that he's a criminal no matter what he does the rest of his life. So it's a mixed thing. He likes certain aspects of the book, but he doesn't like other aspects of the book. I think it's all in all, he's happy about it, but he's nervous.
There's probably some startup lurking in his future.
It's definitely possible. I mean, he still wants to go to space. And so since he can't do it through NASA, he's going to have to do it in the business sector. So who knows?
Ben Mezrich, his book is Sex on the Moon, the amazing story behind the most audacious heist in history. Just out from Doubleday. Ben, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.